I think we so easily view it as this is just like a nice break from the main things in the rest of our week. The Sabbath is the thing that reminds us what the main thing is, that then allows us to go and do the other things that God has called us to do.
At some level, failure to take a Sabbath is failure to acknowledge God and making a conscious decision to say, the world depends on me, my circumstances depend on me, my situation depends on me, and I can't possibly take a day off from that.
Welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast, where we discuss practical Christian living, how to build thriving communities, and how to be extraordinary at the ordinary. I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And as you may be able to tell, listeners, my voice has still not fully recovered as of yet. Peek behind the curtain is that we often will record multiple episodes in the same recording session. So if you listened last week, you know that I have been recovering from a cold. And it turns out that I'm still recovering from a cold. And we just recorded last week's episode. And so my voice still has a little bit of extra bass, but is also a little bit extra scratchy in my experience. So just so you all are aware.
Well, that's David just trying to sound cooler than he actually is by deepening his voice and blaming it on a cold. We didn't make him sing last time, and I guess we won't make him sing this time.
Thank goodness.
But maybe, David, what you should do is take a rest. Do you think you need a break?
You know, I have appreciated being able to take some more opportunities to rest over the course of this cold because it's lasted an annoyingly long time. And so I have definitely struggled with I want to be back to work and be getting things done, but I also know that my body needs to rest. So maybe, but I also feel a little bit restless because I want to get things done.
Isn't there a strange irony there? There's this irony that, you know, when we get sick, and I'm speaking of myself as well, that we get sick and what we really need to do is rest. And if we rested, we would recover. But instead, right, we think we don't have time to rest. So we keep working. The quality of the work is generally completely in the toilet. It's terrible. And yet then we now extend the sickness because our body's not getting the rest that we need. And it's almost like we're ignoring the specific command. And unfortunately, David, I understand this intellectually, but I almost never practice this in reality. And this became apparent to me at a conference that I was at recently, retreat. Some of the listeners might know a man by the name of Steve Demme, who has a lot of wisdom, a lot of perspective, and has been a good mentor to me over the years in a couple of different areas. And I was at this retreat, and I was basically mentioning that I was tired and I was weary, and you know, got sympathetic listens to that, appreciated it. Sort of little break time, and Steve just kind of comes over and he says, I'm just curious, do you tithe? I was like, yeah, I tithe. And he's like, you know, do you tithe like the whole traditional 10%? And I was like, yeah. He says, have you ever tithed and come up short? And I said, no. You know, that's one of the interesting things about tithing in my life, is that, you know, I've never written that check and then went back and was like, man, now we can't pay for groceries. You know, I mean, it's mm-hmm. you know, it always some sort of seems like a lot, but that it never works out that that's a problem. And he said, so you trust that God provides for you enough that you tithe all the time? I said, yes. And so Steve's a large person. And so I'm looking up at him and he puts his hand on my shoulder and he said, I just find it's really interesting that you understand that about tithing, but you're willing to ignore that reality when it comes to the Sabbath. Ooh. And the last time I checked, keeping the Sabbath and taking a rest is part of the Ten Commandments. Tithing is not. Wow. So maybe you should think about that. So,
wow.
About 6 months later, here we are. And David, I'm thinking about that. Which brings us to our question.
Wow. Yeah, I don't think we could have asked for a better lead into that. And the question is taking a Sabbath really necessary? And yeah,
according to Steve Demme, the answer is yes.
So. Yeah, that's when you bring up the Ten Commandments, that's kind of hard to argue with. But I also like I think that it's worth a question worth wrestling with, because I think even in Christian culture. Now, like, rest in a non-Christian culture is, you know, taken a lot of different directions, and it's just much more of a vacation just for you and your own just kind of selfish desires. And so I think there's, you know, a lot of different things about that. But I think especially in a Christian context where we know what a Sabbath is, or at least we have an idea of what it's supposed to be, usually it's something that's just kind of, at least in my experience, I don't know about how you've seen this, Jonathan, where I've seen it a lot is just like, oh yeah, that just means that like we should like rest every once in a while when we need it. And it just means that, you know, on Sundays that like we should just like make sure to go to church and like take it a little bit easier if we can. But if, you know, if there's other things that we need to get done, then we'll still do that. And it's really kind of viewed much more as just like that's kind of a thing that was like way more important in their day. And, you know, taking a day, taking a Sabbath is, you know, just kind of more of a concept of just like, you know, oh, like, just don't wear yourself out too much, and is not really taken nearly as seriously as most of the rest of the commandments. Has that been your experience as well?
Yeah, I think I was thinking about this as you were talking. I was, and for a little bit as well, there seems to be two interesting directions on Sabbath. If anybody's ever read the Little House books, you know, like the Little House on the Prairie, I think it's in Farmer Boy, right? That they have the, do they have the,
I don't remember. It's been a long time.
Yeah. And it could be that they're not even those books. So take that under consideration, but there is at least some stories, and there's lots of stories and experience. And in fact, there's still some examples of this go around today, you know, where Sabbath is a day of rest, and that rest becomes extremely legalistic. You know, so you're not allowed to sing, you're not allowed to play, you're not allowed, you know, it's a sit still. And, you know, I think that was what I remember from this story that I think is in Farm Board, but I could be incorrect. It's like, you know, you come home from church and you basically sit all day long. And so there's this legalistic, you know, what is work, what is not, you can't be anything with effort. And so there's that. And that has vanished mostly in our culture, and it's replaced with this, it doesn't really matter what day of the week it is. And, you know, you kind of chill out a little bit, maybe watch some Netflix, you know, take a nap. You know, there's this kind of flippancy about it that is like, yeah, if I get a chance, maybe I'll sort of slow down a little bit, but I'm not really super disciplined about it. And one, of course, robs the Sabbath of any kind of joy and recuperation in some ways, the legalistic side. And the second robs it of any kind of power. And tragically, I think both really walks us into the inherent problem with this, which is kind of what Steve was pointing out when in that little story of mine, which is, you know, at some level, failure to take a Sabbath is failure to acknowledge God. And making a conscious decision to say, the world depends on me, my circumstances depend on me, my situation depends on me, and I can't possibly take a day off from that. And right. That's the part that's been most challenging for me, because I intellectually know that it's incorrect, but I do not live that out by my actions.
Yeah, yeah. I relate to that, because I feel like a lot of the time I feel like, okay, the way that I justify it in my head is that I see all of the things that I, you know, need, quote unquote, to get done. And a lot of those things like are very important things. A lot of those things are things that I view in my life as blessings, you know, whether that's just like, you know, taking care of like, you know, the possessions that I have, you know, like working on like maintaining like my home or my car or something like that, or, you know, doing things like that. You know, I see a lot of these things, or potentially like doing, you know, extra work for, you know, just like my actual like my job, whether that's like doing things for Unbound or otherwise. I see all those things, and like the way that I justify it in my head is these are good things that God has given me to steward, and therefore I need to do everything in my power to make sure that I am like keeping and taking care of these things well, and that like I am working as hard as I possibly can to make sure that I'm not squandering these gifts that God has given me. And so like that feels like a very noble and righteous way to, you know, to look at it, to justify it. And there is truth to it in that. Yes, I do believe that I should be working very hard to make sure that all of the gifts that God has given me, that I am taking care of them well. At the same time, that doesn't acknowledge the reality that they were gifts from God to begin with. And ultimately, if I truly believe that God is as in control as I know that he is, that them being mine, quote unquote, really just means that he has ordained things in such a fashion that the things that are his, I get to participate with and take care of for a season. And they are all ultimately his anyway, and I want them to all ultimately be his. And so if I believe all of that, and if I also believe the commandment to rest, why would I not trust that even if I can see that there are things to get done, that God is going to work things out in such a way that he is going to make sure that I and the gifts that he has given me are taken care of? It's a challenging question.
Yeah, because I think what is the Sabbath really necessary? I think that our modern kind of cultural Christian mind says no, because we're released from the law. And so that whole, like, you know, Sabbath can be whatever day we make it. And it doesn't have to be a specific day of the week. It doesn't have to be. And so there might be some real truth to that in terms of being freed from the law. And certainly, you know, if you look at what the Hebrews considered Sabbath and what we consider Sabbath is different day by off by one. And so there's some things to understand there. But I think the major problem I see is that there's a quick drift from that to, well, Sabbath is kind of pick and choose. And so the functional answer to the is the Sabbath really necessary is no, the way we live it out. The answer, of course, and it kind of begs the answer, is the Sabbath really necessary? Yes, clearly it's a commandment. You know, so the bigger question is why? Why is it really necessary? And I think that there's two things to explore here. The first is the one that we ignore a lot, is that it's a good thing. That it's a good thing. That, you know, and you know, you have the creation story and then God rested. Does God need to rest? Clearly not. He's God. I mean, I think theologically we would answer that no, does God's all powerful. And so he rested. So there's an inherent sense of enjoyment there. You know, he rested to appreciate what he made. And so there is a rest and a celebration and a joy and a be at peace aspect here that we miss, that we often desperately need. And it is combined with exactly what you were talking about, David, which is this, do you really trust? So is the Sabbath really necessary? Yes, because it's a weekly test to see if you really think you're God or you think God's God. And if you ask any of us who profess to be Christians, are you God or is God God? We'd be like, God's God, I'm not God. God's ways are not. I mean, like, we could rat off the scriptures. We could say all that stuff. And then if we examine your life, you'd say, well, you don't, I mean, like, if God is God, God is in control of your life. God is in charge of the universe. God holds all things in his hands. God provides. God, you know, fill in all these blanks. And yet here you are not taking a break. Why? And you would answer, because I got things to do. I got things to get done. Interesting. You know, you have things to get done. You have things to do.
I was going to say, notice who's the subject of that.
Right. And I, just to be clear to our listeners, I'm saying this as the convicted one. I am not a good Sabbath keeper. Now, I attempt to do it, but I am just acknowledging publicly attempt is not the same as succeed. And I've had quite a bit of failure in this area. And I've been slowly growing in this conviction that at heart, I'm failing this weekly test of, are you in charge or is God in charge? I know the answer. I'll be able to give it to you with great articulation, but my actions are often quite different. And that friction is a revelation and part of why the Sabbath is necessary. And then I think it's interesting because it's the gateway, right? How could you truly be at peace in a broken and fallen, sinful world where there's always more things to do than you have time to do? Well, the only way you could truly be at peace is if you truly believe God's in charge. Well, how will you know if God's in charge? Well, if you live your life like he is. Well, what does that look like? It means taking a Sabbath. it means pausing and releasing that to God. And if you're not doing that, it doesn't matter what your excuses are. At some level, you're basically, by your actions, saying you don't really believe God's in charge. Mm-hmm. I say that as one who's living on that side of things, not the right side of things.
Yeah. Yeah. It is so challenging to do that. And I think we miss so often that these commandments, and especially this command to rest, is not just for our benefit. It is to give us an opportunity to recenter ourselves on what is ultimately important. And there is a reason for that. And there's also a reason why we have the Sabbath day on the same day that we go to church, on the same day that we go and we participate, we worship corporately with other believers, we gather together and we reset and recenter our attention on God, who he is, what he has done, and how that should affect our lives. And then we have the whole rest, that whole day to absorb that, to not then say, okay, that was good, now I get to move on and just go do the other things in my life. No, to then like take that and let that inform the rest of your week. I think we so easily view it as this is just like a nice break from the main things in the rest of our week. In reality, the Sabbath is the thing that reminds us what the main thing is, that then allows us to go and do the other things that God has called us to do that ultimately contribute to building his kingdom. The Sabbath is the day where we get to focus fully on the kingdom and see how that is going, get a little glimpse and have just that time to dedicate towards looking towards the kingdom rather than doing the day-to-day work that we are doing, working towards that until then.
So, David, that brings us down to the practical pieces then. So what is it that you do practically to observe the Sabbath, as you've articulated well why it's important? And I think that makes a lot of sense. What are some disciplines, some practices that you put in place to help you remember that and to exercise that?
Yeah, very good question. Because I think, for one thing, based on what I just said, doing everything in my power to make sure that as much as we are able to go and to worship in church corporately with others on Sundays, like even if I don't feel like it, now spreading sickness, in this particular case, I did not go this last Sunday because I would not like to share, my sickness with others. But, even if I, if I wake up on a Sunday morning and I just feel, I don't really feel like going to worship, going anyway, because a lot of the times, either on the drive there or once I get there, then that will change. Or even sometimes on that Sunday, it's just like, don't really feel like I got much out of that. But it's like, yeah, but doing that anyway and participating in that is helpful, even if my mind has a lot of other things on it. And I think for me, the biggest thing that I try to do is just make sure that it is a day where, as much as possible, the sort of like my vocational calling of like my 9-to-5 and my, anything that is earning me money, I am trying to give my brain a rest from thinking about those things. It's so easy for me to be continuing to think about that or to talk about that with my friends and family, or to just let that kind of continue its way into the Sabbath day. And so just trying as much as possible to just say, there are 6 other days of the week that I can think about and look at and, try to problem solve all of these things for my job. And today is not the day where I won't need to do that. And I need to release that and just look to focus on the other things, which oftentimes the last thing I'll point out is that, like, I try to maximize time with friends and family as much as possible. Sometimes that's just trying to spend intentional time with my wife. Sometimes that's going and hanging out with family or friends and just like enjoying time together. But just, I think, recognizing the value of having good community and other people and just life outside of the things that I tend to be worried about so often, it, I think, is one of the most helpful Sabbath practices for me. So I'm curious, what does it look like for you, Jonathan?
Yeah, there's some similarities there. I feel like it's sort of like we're talking about. I understand what to do. I don't always do it. So I have to get smaller steps. We've talked about this before in other podcasts. You have to kind of move that down so that you can get some real success and some momentum. First, of course, it is attending church and worshiping. So that is really important. And like you, try to make that a inviolate discipline. And I'm probably best at that. Secondly, I'm worst at not thinking about work. So I strive very hard to do that. I rarely succeed, but when I fail, I acknowledge it as a sin. Like that big of a deal. It is a thing I'm supposed to do Monday through Saturday, but it is a sin to do that on Sabbath, which I observe on Sunday. Like you, I try to say yes to any relational things. Sometimes I'm too tired to plan them, but if somebody else plans them, or if we get invited, or if, you know, somebody wants to come over, the answer is yes. More and more, I've tried to attempt to take a nap. I don't really have time for naps. Mm-hmm. I have the rest of my week, and so that's different. I don't restrict what I eat, and I don't really have major restrictions what I eat anyhow, but I try to be, as I'm getting older, I'm trying to be more conscious about, you know, at least being wise about that. And I set that aside on Sundays and don't worry about it. I know that it would make a lot of sense to just have a digital fast and to turn off cell phones and all those kinds of things.
If you're homeschooling your student through high school, it can be one of the most rewarding and challenging parts of their education, especially if you're trying to find resources that will prepare them for the real world. And that's exactly why we created Equip. Equip is a coaching program for 9th through 11th graders that plugs right into whatever curriculum you're already using and reinforces it with real-world skills courses, helping students learn things like time management, study skills, and Christian worldview. They get to learn all of this alongside other students in their class, and it's reinforced by our coaches, who help keep students accountable and encourage them as they learn. But the best part about Equip is the projects. Each semester, students come up with a project that they'll take from idea to planning to execution and reporting. They can pick just about anything they're interested in, as long as it's something that will challenge them and push them to put the skills they've been learning into practice, preparing them to do the same thing in the real world. If you want to learn more, visit beunbound.us/equip.
Really achieve that, but I've given myself permission to not respond to texts and to not respond to phone calls. And so I only text somebody or only call somebody if I want to. And when I say want to, I don't want somebody listening to this saying, well, I texted Jonathan. He must not want to really respond. It's not so much even that I want to talk to that person, is that do I want to take the time to do that? Right. And so sometimes just, you know, my job is one that I need to be fairly responsive because of my responsibilities. And sometimes I can leave things hanging the rest of the week. So just that psychological freedom to sort of say, I don't have to respond to this right now, can be a big rest area for me. Yeah. And then finally, the last piece is I've been trying to non-guiltily participate in recreational activities. I've worked on the motorcycle the last two Sundays, which is fun for me. It wasn't work in the sense that it was labor. It was things that I like to do and really couldn't justify the rest of the week because the motorcycle is... we've talked about this before, that the motorcycle is unnecessary in my life, which means that it's a bit of a worship machine for me. So if I do anything with it, it reminds me of how little I need it. It's a reminder of blessing and God's exuberance blessings in my life. And so the chance to work on it is kind of a reminder of like, oh, this is fun. And it's something that's fun that I don't need. And that's a good reminder. And there's, yeah, maybe any hobby would fill that need, but this one's the most extravagant in my life. So.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's something really important there that I want to point out is that you pointed out that like doing something like, you know, working on the motorcycle is very much like a restful thing for you and just like falls under that category and is something that you can see as like freeing and taking your mind off of things. And I was thinking in my head of the concept of like doing car maintenance on a Sunday, that would fall much more into the category for me of like, that's like a thing that I have to get done and like a to-do list item that I personally check off. And so I think that's worth drawing out, because that's something that for me, if I was trying to like do some sort of car maintenance on a Sunday, I personally would feel convicted that that was breaking the Sabbath for me, because that falls much more into a category of a work type of task. But I don't think that means that for you, like I fully believe and agree that that is a restful thing for you. I think that there's multiple other things that could do that. For example, a lot of the times I will end up, especially when the weather is good, either on Sunday morning before church or on Sunday afternoons, especially like in the fall and winter, I will end up just like going out for like an easy long run. And I find that personally to be fairly restful. I know that for a lot of other people, that would very much not be the case. But I think that just anything that in your head gives you the space to like just kind of have that. Oh, OK. Like, I'm not just like checking another thing off of the to do list. Like, this is something that I am just taking the time to enjoy. I think recognizing that difference and how that can look different for different people is important.
Yeah, there's some interesting things there. Changing the oil on the car would be work for me. Mm-hmm. Changing the oil on the motorcycle is rest. And there is something, and I know it tends to legalism, and so I'm not mandating this for everybody else. I'm just saying that those are interesting nuances I've sorted out in my own life. The car's oil has to be changed. The bike's oil doesn't, because riding the bike is a luxury.
Yeah.
And maybe another interesting example is that I like mowing grass. It's a rare time for me to be able to listen to podcasts, as I have Bluetooth headphones on, headset on, and mow. And so it's not like a hard salt mine type labor thing, but it is a chore that's to be done every week. And so I'm tempted to mow sometimes on Sundays, and I try to resist it. I like mowing. I don't dislike it. I don't think it's a hard thing, but it is a regular weekly chore. It is definitely a to-do thing. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying harder to reserve that time for things that are not to-dos. You know, they're not recurring tasks. They're unnecessary, and it's their very level of unnecessaryism, which I'm sure is not a word, but that is proportional to, by doing something unnecessary, it's an act of faith that God will take care of what is necessary. Mm-hmm. If I mow on Sunday, I'm basically saying, Lord, I don't know if I'm going to get a chance on Monday to mow this grass. And by not mowing, I'm saying, Lord, I have no idea when I'm going to mow this grass, but I trust either that you'll provide the time or the grass doesn't need mowed as much as I think it does. And that's not an excuse to not mow Monday afternoon or Monday evening when I should, so we don't have to get confused about that. But there's something about that whole process of, I know we're going to have to get the oil changed in the car because, we hit the mileage mark. That is a have to. Changing the oil in the motorcycle, it's good for the motorcycle, but I don't have to ever ride the motorcycle. It's always a luxury. Mm-hmm. And so that's a different category. And that's one of the ways that I try to sort it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a helpful sorting of it. And like another example for me is meal prep. Like a lot of the times, like on Sundays, either mornings before we leave for church or like after we get back from church, like I'll do a little bit of meal prep. And that's something that can at times be a more of a to-do list item, but because I've found that like cooking and finding recipes that I enjoy meal prepping is more of a thing that I enjoy, and I don't see it quite as much of a to-do list item. It can be, especially if I like have a trip coming up and like I want to make sure that I have several things prepped to take along with me. But I think that's something that kind of sits a little bit on the edge, but ultimately I can still see as a restful thing, especially because a lot of the time, for example, like, my wife will be like working a puzzle like in the other part of the room, and like we'll end up like having a conversation while we're both working on those things. And so I think there's like ways that you can kind of go about them in some of those things that are more or less restful and in better accordance with keeping the Sabbath.
Is taking a Sabbath really necessary? Yes. And you probably already knew the answer to that question. But the reality and the reasons behind that are perhaps a little deeper and worth some consideration. We'll have some final thoughts right after this. All right, David, in our circles, you're known as the tech person. As a matter of fact, just recently, I just sent you a request and said, hey, my girls need a laptop for school, and their last one is on its last legs. Their old one's on its last legs, so which one do we buy? And you sent it to me, and I told my wife, I said, just buy this. Every time David sends me something to buy, I've done it, and it's always worked out fine. And so you know a lot about technology, and so I think that this question then is interesting. What technology is frustrating you right now and driving you crazy, David? Because you're a more educated answer to this than I'm going to have.
Despite the fact that I work with technology and I enjoy technology a lot, there are some technologies that frustrate me to no end. So, I could go on a rant about printers and, how they are some of the most convoluted pieces of technology to ever exist and how half of the printer industry is designed to scam you out of money.
Preach it, brother.
However, I'm not going to do that because that would be a whole separate entire episode of the podcast. For this segment, I'm going to talk about something that's been a little bit more directly frustrating to me recently, and that is Meta's advertising suite. Now, for those of you who may hear, like, what was like Meta's advertising suite? So that is Meta is the parent company that owns Facebook and Instagram now that Mr. Zuckerberg is in charge of. And we do here at Unbound a decent amount of advertising. And I also do some advertising for clients on the side using advertising for Facebook and Instagram. I'm not, to be completely honest, super thrilled about the fact that I work in a field that consistently gives money to these companies because I have some personal reservations about their outlook on humanity. But I can't deny that they're effective, so we make use of them. But the thing that has frustrated me most recently with them is that Meta has decided that they want to introduce a lot of what they call optimizations to help you in your advertising campaigns. They've introduced more and more and more over the last couple of years, especially with AI growing more popular. Now, this started as being something that's relatively innocuous. At first, they just started as, hey, we will just do some automatic just like adjustments to like the brightness and contrast of the photo that you use for your ad. That's simple enough. Like if I want that, I could try turning that on. But most of the time, I just turn that off and don't worry about it. Now, where things started to really get frustrating, Jonathan, is when they decided that in the infinite wisdom of our technological overlords at Meta, they decided we're going to try just every once in a while turning on one of our optimizations, even when in none of the hundreds of ad campaigns and creatives that you've run before, have you ever turned on one of these optimizations? And so that at first was like, well, that's kind of annoying, but as long as it's just doing something like adjusting the brightness or contrast, then that's not that big of a deal. Jonathan, do you think that the optimization stayed with just brightness or contrast?
I'm just, because I'm a very perceptive person, David, I'm thinking no.
Yeah. See, they have continued to develop these optimizations. So then they started having it so that the text options, the text that you see when the ad comes up in your feed, they would create some alternative options for you. And if you weren't careful, you had to very carefully like look in a drop down menu that they would hide and select the option that says do not automatically apply the recommendations, because otherwise Meta's AI would come up with some text that may or may not actually reflect the offer that you're trying to promote. And then here's the most egregious one, Jonathan, is that they just recently came out with one that they started turning on automatically on all of the ads called related media. Now, the idea is that if you upload, just like one of the products in your catalog and you use a picture of it as the ad, then they will try to look for other pictures that you have uploaded in the past of similar things, and they will also add it as just an alternative that may perform better on the ad. Now, that could work in theory if all you have are product photos. Now, for us in particular, that really doesn't work when you have very specific offers, for example, local events. And so it becomes very frustrating when all of a sudden you have people who are sending messages to your page who are very confused as to why they are supposed to be getting ads for a local event that we're going to be running in Roanoke, Virginia, when they are getting an image served to them about an event that happened 3 months ago in Alabama, because Meta decided, you know what, these are actually fairly similar. We're going to go ahead and run this ad image too. So I had to go through every single one of our ads that we are currently running and turn off that feature to avoid them running completely the wrong offer to the wrong segment of the audience, because Meta decided that it wanted to be smarter than me.
So, audience, if you haven't gotten this yet, the big takeaway here is if you get an ad from us and it looks totally messed up, it was Meta's fault and not David's.
That is unfortunately true only like 99% of the time, but that 99% is still very frustrating. The 1% when it's my fault is also frustrating, to be clear, but it's for different reasons, and I can fix that.
You would accept responsibility for that.
I would. I, or at least I would hope that I would.
It's very courageous of you.
Thank you.
Well, for this week's student feature, I am joined once again by a member of the Unbound Student Cabinet, who are the amazing team of students who work so hard to make Unbound's Apex event happen every August. And so I'm joined by one of the members of this year's team, Destiny. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. So, Destiny, tell me a little bit about what you specifically have been doing as part of your time on Cabinet this year.
I was on the content team, which is everything that happens on stage and contacting speakers, getting the contracts, and really focusing in on what our theme is and what we want to present to the students. And I think it was a bit difficult for us because this is a really important topic and we were really picky on who we wanted to be our speakers. So I think we definitely kind of, I wouldn't want to say struggled, but we took a lot of time and just studying all of these people that we had in mind to come to the event. And then afterwards, there's also, I'm now in the graduation team and also the welcoming events team. I think they're both going really well. They kind of both have different vibes, but I'm really excited for all the students to come and see what we had planned for the graduation ceremony and the party, and then all the games that we have prepared for the welcoming party. So
That's really cool. Yeah, it seems like you guys are being very intentional about every single little part of what the attendees are going to experience. So that's really cool to see. So for you personally, as part of this whole process, what do you feel like have been the biggest things that you have learned, both in terms of just practical skills, but also just things that you've learned about yourself and how you've worked in a team through your time on Cabinet?
I think starting off with just as a team, I really learned how to hone my skill and working with others specifically in the way, because we all have different skills. And, you know, as a team, when you put all the skills together, it kind of just becomes one. So there are certain things that my teammate is better at than I am. So I really learned on how to go to them and be like, okay, hey, I know Silas is really good at videography, or just to visualize ideas and then to make it into reality. So I can go to that person instead of just sitting alone on myself, be like, okay, well, I don't know how to do that. So that was one thing that has been really helpful and really cool to see. Personally, I've always kind of, how do I word this? Okay. Personally, I think I've always kind of been that independent person where it's like, oh, I can do this by myself. And I think I always prove myself every time where it's like, well, I can't, because we really can't. Like, we have a community for a reason, right? And we have people that we can work with for a reason. And that was like the number one thing I wanted to see being in Cabinet, was working with the team and seeing all the different dynamics and how we all work together as a team. So I think this past half year, I've really seen myself grow in asking people for help, actually speaking up for myself, and then also learning from them. So I think those two were like the biggest things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that takes a lot of maturity to admit when you need help, especially as somebody who tends to want to believe that they can do things on their own. I relate to that. So I think that's really cool that this has allowed you to learn that in a really great environment and with a really good team. So that's really cool. Now, last but not least, I would just love to hear what you personally are most excited for when Apex finally comes about in August.
I've gotten this question so many times already, and I get so excited thinking about it. So when I first came to Apex, your first impressions are everything. You know, when I first got there, it's like everyone, I see all the commotion, all the chatter, there's people playing. And then as the days go by, there are these huge games that are super stressful and you have to win, and learning from all the speakers. So I can't wait till we're at Apex, and then I'm just in the corner, I'm looking out, and then just seeing everyone's different reactions, or just something simple as walking past a group of people and just hearing them talk about something that they heard in a session, or what speaker said, or how they really liked one of our games, or how they really hated us for one of our games. You know, just anything and everything. I'm really excited to see.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it's all about the attendees and the experience that you give them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I cannot wait to be a part of the event and to just see everyone see just the hard work that you guys have put into this. And I am so excited to just see all of these plans come together. So, Destiny, thank you for joining me, and look forward to seeing what you guys have come up with at Apex.
Looking forward for you guys to see it. Thank you.
Well, David, this is a good conversation, but it's an uncomfortable one. This is definitely a conversation where, as we're having it, I have this real strong sense of hypocrisy. So I just feel it's absolutely necessary for me to come clean on this and say, these things are right. I believe what we're saying here. I think there's a profound truth. And also, I've had a really hard time living this out correctly. And at root, there is definitely a struggle with understanding how to trust God. I think intellectually, I trust God. I think from a faith standpoint, I certainly have massive evidence in my life of God is worthy of trust. And yet there is a constant struggle in my own life to really release and really trust. And that's evidenced by the fact that keeping the Sabbath is necessary. And yet I consistently struggle to do that. And one of the important things of asking that question is it reveals that inadequacy. It reveals that gap. And it's a reminder of what's necessary to work on. And in this case, work on is sort of an ironic term. Not work on as in labor, but in fact, the exact opposite. What I need to release, what I need to trust, what I need to rest in and believe God and accept his promise. And even as we're saying that, I'm thinking to myself, you can't forget this, you ridiculous idiot. You're doing a podcast about it. You should remember.
Yeah, there's no better way to remember and remind yourself of how important something is than to say that it's important in front of a whole bunch of people. So listeners, if you end up seeing Jonathan or I, doing a bunch of work on a Sunday, this is your invitation to, give us a little bit of a healthy conviction of that. Which is a little bit challenging.
Or worse, call Steve Demi and rat us out. So.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, it's a little bit challenging, especially because we do travel for conventions on weekends quite often. And so that makes it a little bit challenging sometimes. But
yeah, those days, that's if you really want a challenge, it's to travel on a Sabbath and then take Monday off. I always schedule Monday off. And then I'm like, there's this almost gravitational pull. Like, I'm just going to check one thing. I'm just going to do one thing. Oh. And, yeah, it which brings us back and maybe sets us up for a topic of another podcast. For me, it's so much more helpful to remember to keep the Sabbath when I start with worship and collective worship. Mm-hmm. And, I can come on Monday and say, I'm going to worship. I'm going to pray and sit, maybe even sing some hymns and to read my Bible. And I sometimes do that, but that's not the same as the corporate worship. And I struggle harder to get into the rest of the Sabbath. But mm-hmm. but that may be a topic for another podcast, a follow-up podcast, perhaps when David sounds a little less deep and gravelly and a little less raspy. And you can decide, dear listeners, whether that is an improvement or not. Until next time, be unbound.